Emotions run high as the Republican National Convention gets underway.
We have got to get back to common sense. We have got to get back and stop what the hell is going on.
Plus, the FBI names a suspect but has no motive yet in the shooting of Donald Trump.
State police have been in regular contact with the governor's office, and the full support and assets of the entire agency are behind the FBI and our other federal and municipal partners to assist with this investigation.
And later, Israel goes after Hamas's military leader, an update from Kyiv, and a look at Election Day in Rwanda. Today is Monday, July 15th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint, Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. As you likely know by now, former President Donald Trump survived an assassination attempt on Saturday. He was shot in the ear while giving a speech at a campaign rally in Pennsylvania. This week, a defiant Donald Trump will attend the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where after Saturday's shock, his supporters are now energized. VOA's senior Washington correspondent, Carolyn Prosciutto, is there.
So let's pray.
Prayers for former President Donald Trump.
And God told him to be strong and courageous.
Who survived an assassination attempt on Saturday and flew to the Republican National Convention on Sunday. Hilario De Leon is chair of the Republican Party of Milwaukee County.
The whole campaign has changed. The whole message has changed. Someone tried to kill our candidate.
A defiant Donald Trump posted on Truth Social that he cannot allow a potential assassin to force him to change his schedule. Emmy DeClue is a Missouri delegate.
Every time something happens to him, I feel like it solidifies his win even more. So he's kind of reached legendary status.
At a hotel across town, the South Carolina delegation was talking about Saturday and how it made them more determined. After the immediate shock of being hit on the top of his ear, Trump stood with his fist up and mouthed, "Fight." Yvonne Julian is chair of the Greenville County Republican Party.
The stand and fight, that iconic image now with the blood running down his face, the blue sky, the American flag. I mean, it's going to live.
The gunman used an AR-style rifle, often preferred by mass shooters. But delegates say its use on their candidate doesn't change the Republican Party's stance on gun control. Becky McLaughlin is a South Carolina delegate.
It's not the danger of the gun. It's what happens when the gun goes in the hand of the wrong person.
President Joe Biden Sunday reminded Americans that the country resolves its differences by voting and that violence is never the answer. He also ordered the U.S. Secret Service to review its safety measures at the Republican convention, already under tight security. Deborah Manning is a national delegate to the convention.
We have got to get back to common sense. We have got to get back and stop what the hell is going on.
Due to the assassination attempt, one delegate said, maybe the theme of this year's convention should be, let's make America safe again. Carolyn Prosciutto, VOA News at the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Some more on the attempted assassination of the former president. The FBI has named a suspect, but is still looking for a motive, and a full investigation into the incident is underway. Arash Arabasadi has more.
The FBI identified 20-year-old Thomas Matthew Crooks as the shooter, and the Secret Service says it fatally shot him outside the rally venue. Authorities say a motive for the attack is currently unknown. Colonel Chris Paris of the Pennsylvania State Police speaking on local station WTAE as provided by AP.
State police have been in regular contact with the governor's office, and the full support and assets of the entire agency are behind the FBI and our other federal and municipal partners to assist with this investigation. The thoughts and prayers of the Pennsylvania State Police are likewise with the victims of this terrible act.
By Sunday, law enforcement and news media descended on Pennsylvania's Bethel Park neighborhood that was home for the suspected shooter. World leaders took to the social media platform X to denounce the attempt on Trump's life and to condemn political violence, while the nation's top-ranking Republican said America awakened to a surreal morning. House Speaker Mike Johnson speaking on NBC's Today Show.
This is a horrific act of political violence that ought to be roundly condemned. We've got to turn the rhetoric down. We've got to turn the temperature down in this country. We need leaders of all parties on both sides to call that out and make sure that happens so that we can go forward and maintain our free society that we all are blessed to have.
President Joe Biden said everybody must condemn the attack and that he was relieved by reports that Trump is doing well. Biden cuts short a trip to his home state of Delaware to monitor the unfolding situation from the White House. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
And still more news and more controversy for the former president. In a move that has many legal scholars confused, charges against Donald Trump for illegally taking classified documents with him when he left the White House have been dismissed. For more, I'm joined by VOA's chief national correspondent, Steve Herman.
A federal judge, Eileen Cannon, dismissed the criminal case today, accusing a former president of illegally holding on to classified documents. And this is a major victory for Donald Trump, obviously. What Judge Eileen Cannon in Florida said, that the special counsel, Jack Smith, who's been leading this prosecution, was unlawfully appointed to his role and did not have authority to bring the case.
So to be clear, this isn't a judgment of guilt or innocence. This is simply saying the trial is improper.
Yes, this is not a statement of guilt or innocence. This is the judge tossing out the case completely. Now, prosecutors are likely to appeal Judge Cannon's ruling, and they seem to have a strong case if they do appeal, because courts in other cases have repeatedly upheld the ability of the Justice Department to appoint special counsels to handle certain politically sensitive investigations like this one. But definitely this does eliminate, at least for the time being, a very serious legal peril that Donald Trump had faced. And Jack Smith is also prosecuting Donald Trump in federal court in Washington, D.C. over his attempts to overturn the 2020 election. His lawyers have not made a similar challenge to the special counsel in that case. So that case is still on for the moment.
Now, Steve, you're in Milwaukee at the Republican convention. I'd be remiss for not asking you about the mood there, especially given the recent assassination attempt.
Look, this is a big positive festival for Republicans that they hold every 4 years. You have delegates coming from all across the United States. It is one big party. Now, of course, what happened the other day in Pennsylvania has immediately overshadowed things here. And we're told that the party itself is deciding who and who cannot speak about the assassination attempt when they get on the floor of the convention for their different speeches. It is most certainly something that Donald Trump, in one way or another, is to refer to when he accepts the party's nomination on Thursday night.
It's VOA's chief national correspondent, Steve Herman. He's in Milwaukee for the Republican National Convention. Steve, thanks for your reporting. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure, Steve.
Moving now to the Middle East. Israel carried out a major airstrike in southern Gaza this weekend, targeting Mohammed Deif. He's the commander of Hamas's military wing. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said that while Deif's death could not be confirmed, Israel will kill all of the Hamas leaders. Hamas said at least 90 Palestinian civilians were killed in the strike. Linda Gradstein reports from Jerusalem.
It was Israel's eighth attempt to assassinate Mohammed Deif, the elusive commander of Hamas's military wing, the Izzedine al-Qassam Brigades. Israel says Deif is responsible for terror attacks that have killed hundreds of Israelis, including playing a major role in the October 7th Hamas terror invasion into Israel that killed some 1,200 people and took more than 250 hostages. In a news conference Saturday, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel will not stop until all senior Hamas officials have been killed. He said Deif and his deputy were the targets of the airstrike. Netanyahu said that while there is no final confirmation that Deif was killed, Israel will get to the entire leadership of Hamas. Netanyahu said that Israel's continued military pressure has weakened Hamas and made more likely a deal that would release hostages in exchange for a ceasefire. As Netanyahu was speaking, thousands of Israelis rallied in favor of the ceasefire deal currently being negotiated by Qatar and Egypt. One protester, Ayala Metzger, said it's time for Israel to accept the ceasefire deal.
I don't know about Mohammed Deif. I know that keeping the war is bad for all of us. It needs to be stopped, and we need to bring the hostage back. I think Netanyahu, if he killed Mohammed Deif, so he has now his picture of victory. So bring them back now.
Israel went on high alert around the country, telling residents near Gaza to prepare for possible rocket attacks. Hamas officials denied that Deif or his deputy were killed and said at least 90 civilians were killed. They said the airstrike was in the Al-Muassi area that Israel has designated as a safe zone for Palestinians. In addition to this latest strike, the Israeli military offensive has killed more than 38,000 Palestinians, according to Gaza's health ministry, which does not distinguish between combatants and civilians in its count. Izzat al-Rashak, a member of the Hamas political office, called it a hideous massacre and a dangerous escalation.
The occupation's allegations that it is targeting Palestinian leaders in this brutal raid and massacre are false and baseless. This is not the first time that the occupation has claimed that it is targeting Palestinian leaders, and then it turns out that this is not true. The truth is that these allegations are an attempt to cover up the scale of the crime and the scale of the massacre.
The Israeli airstrike in Gaza comes amid reports that ceasefire talks had been making progress. Many Israelis say that time is running out for the hostages, and the government's first priority should be to bring them home immediately. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
You're listening to Flashpoint Global Crises from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. It's election day in Rwanda. We'll go to Kigali in a few minutes. Now, though, for the latest updates in Ukraine, VOA's Lori London spoke with Anna Chernikova in Kyiv, starting with the reaction on the attempted assassination of former President Trump.
Well, actually, it was quite a shocking news coming from the U.S., of course, and for Ukrainian people who live in a state of war with violence every day, it was very, you know, touching, and people were definitely not happy about what's happening. People condemned this attack, most of people in Ukraine, saying that this is something that should not be a part of politics, should not be a part of the modern way of doing things. Most of people expressed their words of support for Donald Trump, for his fast recovery and ability to continue his work and his campaign. Also, President Zelensky expressed his words of support to Donald Trump right after the attack when this information came in. He said that he is definitely against such acts of violence and this is unacceptable to be a part of the modern politics, of the modern life. President Zelensky also said that he wishes President Donald Trump a fast recovery.
Just a quick follow-up on that horrific attack in Kyiv last week, which hit a children's hospital and was just so tragic, and you were on scene at the time. Are there any updates?
Yeah, actually, unfortunately, two children died as a result of that attack. They were in a serious condition at the moment of the attack in that hospital, and in a couple of days after the attack, it was confirmed that they did not survive. So the number of victims increased, and unfortunately, these are children who added the list of victims. So yeah, at this point, this is what we have. The recovery and the rebuilding of the hospital has already began. A critical infrastructure was restored and Ukrainians collected donations of more than $7 million to support this hospital, just regular Ukrainians. And a lot of other international and Ukrainian organizations will join. So everyone is expecting here that rebuilding of this hospital hospital will begin soon.
And I understand you've learned some interesting insights into Ukraine's population since the war started, since Russia's full-scale invasion.
Every day we're getting news about young people dying in Ukraine, children, young men and women. And of course, this is a very painful topic for Ukrainian society. In its recent research, UN predicted that until 2100, Ukrainian population will decrease to 15 million people. At this point, just for understanding, Ukrainian population is 37 million people, and this number is almost twice less than what Ukrainians have today. Ukrainian Institute of Demographics said that, well, this is quite a pessimistic prognosis. However, the Institute also has a short-term prediction which demonstrates that a decrease might go to something like 30 million, not 15.
And Monday is an important date for Ukraine in general. Tell us about the significance.
Yeah, so July 15th in Ukraine is the day of Ukrainian statehood. It's quite a fresh holiday in Ukraine and very important considering the full-scale invasion and considering that Ukrainian nation, Ukrainian soldiers are fighting for this statehood every day. President Zelensky made an address, a speech to the nation saying how he's thankful to the society, to the soldiers for protecting Ukraine, for preserving the statehood, and that Ukrainian nation will never give up its statehood. And also on this day, this holiday also shares another holiday of the baptism of Kyiv, of Kyiv Rus back in the time. And basically, these are two very important events that happen in the Ukrainian history. So baptism of the country of Kyiv Rus and Ukrainian statehood goes in line together on the same day. So Ukrainians do not really celebrate in the situation of full-scale invasion, but it's an important day to mark and remember what Ukrainians are fighting for.
Anna Chernikova reporting from Kyiv. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Laurie.
Paul Kagame appears to be on track to win a fourth term as Rwanda's president. VOA's Mariama Diallo joins us from Kigali.
Yes, I mean, he's expected to win. That's, you know, many analysts that we've spoken to and other reports that have come out before have all said that he will cruise into victory. Some people have told us the reason is that the Rwandans still see him as the person who saved them from the genocide. He's really come out of the genocide from 1994 to now and has really brought internal peace, stability, and security. So a lot of people still kind of think of him as that person, and that they're diehard kind of supporters, and then they will support him forever, like I had somebody told me today. He's facing two other candidates. You have the Democratic Green Party candidate, Frank Habineza, and you also have an independent candidate, Philippe Mpayimana. But you can see the difference in resources. You can see the difference in support, in campaigning.
Kagame does provide the peace and stability and security, as you said, but not without a cost. Can you explain some of what makes him a controversial figure?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, from the West, when you think about somebody who has been, I mean, if he gets elected, it will be his fourth term. So that's a long time for any democratic country to think of someone staying in power. And I think in 2015, the constitution was changed, and then which gives him another chance to be a president until 2034. I mean, that's a long time. So his critics also, you know, criticize him as saying that he's ruled with a firm hand. He's ruled and he's stifled dissent.
The mood on the street, are Rwandans optimistic about their future?
Every time you talk to the Rwandans, you know, they've obviously gone through hell and back, but they're very optimistic. You know, they look at their country as a country that's advancing and that's going to only get better. I think also the divisions, it's not like, you know, some people want to continue because this is what they know and what they know seem to work. But they're also not opposed to having somebody else come in, but that person, they want that person to continue what has been done already. They're very optimistic.
So we'll leave it there for today. It's VOA's Mariama Diallo reporting today from Kigali in Rwanda. Mariama, thanks for your reporting today.
Thank you so much, Steve, for having me.
And around 4,500 kilometers to the south of Mariama in Kigali is the coast of South Africa. That's where experts warned that the African penguin could be extinct in the wild by the year 2035. That's why two environmental groups are taking legal action against the South African government to help save them. Reporter Vicky Stark in Cape Town has the story.
The African penguin is the only penguin that lives and breeds exclusively in Africa. Sadly, this tuxedoed bird could be extinct in a decade. The latest census done last year reveals less than 10,000 breeding pairs left in the wild. Most of these, just over 8,300, are in South Africa, down from just over 27,100 in 2008. To stop the decline, the Southern African Foundation for the Conservation of Coastal Birds, or SANCOB, and fellow conservation group BirdLife South Africa, represented by the Biodiversity Law Center, are waging a legal battle to get wider, more meaningful fishing restrictions.
African penguins are specialist feeders, so they feed on sardine and anchovy, but it also means that they're in direct competition with the purse seine fishing industry.
In August last year, former Minister of Forestry, Fisheries and the Environment, Barbara Creasy, announced that six no-take fishing zones, officially introduced at the Maine penguin breeding colonies in 2022, would remain in place until 2033. These extend to an almost 12.5-mile radius, which scientists have found to be beneficial, particularly during breeding. However, SANCOB says an international panel of experts appointed by the minister 2 years ago recommended an additional measure of mapping out where the penguins find their food so that these areas can also be protected.
She hasn't implemented that recommendation, so she hasn't reduced the competition between the fisheries industry and the penguins.
In response to VOA's request for comment on the court case, the Department of Forestry, Fisheries and the Environment spokesperson, Peter Mbelengwa, said that the matter is ongoing and is set to be heard at the North Gauteng High Court in October. Meanwhile, as the wheels of justice turn, SANCOB is fundraising to expand the chick-rearing unit at its centre in Tableview, Cape Town. It currently takes in around 400 abandoned eggs and up to 600 abandoned chicks each year. Reasons for parents leaving include food shortages or extreme weather conditions like heat waves or flooding.
The new chick rearing unit will allow us to accept more eggs from the colonies because it just provides us with more space to hold more group up incubators so that we can hatch more eggs.
They need $14,000 to finish building the new unit, where chicks like these will receive the best care and eventually be released back into the wild. Vicky Stark, VOA News, Cape Town, South Africa.
And finally today, the Catholic Church is reporting a significant decrease in the number of new priests and nuns, as well as a change in where they're coming from. The AP's Karen Chamas has more.
Pope Francis has urged religious orders to pray for new priests and nuns as numbers continue to fall. The pontiff acknowledged the congregation's futures are at risk as numbers of people who enter Catholic religious life are plummeting in parts of the world. For over a decade, the overall number of Catholic priests and nuns from Europe and parts of the Americas has been in a free fall as new members fail to make up for deaths and desertions. Francis acknowledged the future of new members were from Asia, Africa, and Latin America. I'm Karen Chamas.
And that's going to wrap up today's show. There's more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Steve Karish.
For deeper dives and expert analysis, listen to VOA Podcasts. Issues in the News explores the biggest stories every weekend, while International Edition keeps you informed every weekday. Plus, with a 5-minute newscast at the top of every hour, you're always up to date.